Good morning, everyone.
Good morning, Professor.
Good morning. I just wanted to make it official that, yes, quiz number two has been moved to Monday, May 11th. I will review on Friday what the topics for the quiz are going to be, once I'm sure which parts of it that are going to be completed in time for the quiz. And what I would like to do first today is to go back and talk about, just in general, the topic of equilibrium. So, equilibrium, I have what I call the three definitions. Has anybody read... Wait, I'm supposed to ask this in a particular way. How many of you have read the book? Come on, let's raise those hands. How many of you have even bothered? I got, what, four hands? Five? Oh, okay, there you go. A few more. Okay, all right. Oh, so you're reading. So can any of you give me an example of what equilibrium is as far as a definition? I hear someone clicking like they're going to respond. Oh, thank you. There we go. Balanced. What is balanced? See, here's what I want to give you. The way that equilibrium is generally defined... Ah, okay, yes, that's exactly it. And let's talk about specifically chemical reactions, because we've actually technically talked about equilibrium before when we were talking about vapor pressure. Remember when we were talking about in a container, you'll have some fraction of molecules that have the energy to be able to evaporate. Once they evaporate, if they're in a closed container, eventually you get some concentration of reagent or of steam that can't be sustained any longer because the molecules don't have enough energy, so they'll condense again, and you'll get to the point where that rate of evaporation and condensation ends up being equal. But like I said, I would like to do this as a chemical reaction example. So the way we would say it is the rate of the forward reaction is equal to the rate of the reverse reaction. But I can remember one of my own chemistry teachers telling me that it's stressing the word dynamic, that this is a dynamic equilibrium, meaning that it doesn't just stop. Once the rates are equal, that doesn't mean that stop. That means the rates, meaning an ongoing process, are equal to each other. And that's why the emphasis on dynamics. But how can we measure that? Well, we can look at concentrations. So in fact, in your book, to break out of text for just a moment here, for those who graphics do better, you're going to see a graph that looks something like this, where you have concentration of reactants that you start with, and they drop off over time. And I'm being a little bit loose with the way I'm representing this, because if you have multiple reactants, we know that... So just bear with me. I'm trying to be quick with this discussion. That might be the concentration of reactants disappearing, and then you have the concentration of products. And the point is, both of those things will level off over time. So... That the dynamic part is that the reactions don't stop, but the point here is that the concentrations of reactants and products are constant. Now, this always gets misinterpreted. So they're constant, but not necessarily equal. Just like in the example diagram there. Not worrying about units, not worrying about how we should properly represent concentrations. You can tell that in this example, we end up with more products than reactants, and going out a long enough period of time, if nothing disturbs the system, well, then that stays constant. But that means not equal. There's one other way of thinking about equilibrium then, and that's related to that reaction progress diagram that I introduced the other day. If the balance of products and reactants depends on the energy of the products and reactants, and if you reach a point where those concentrations are constant, then that means you end up with a constant balance of energy between those reactants and products. Wait, what did I just say? If equilibrium is about how reactants and products are balanced, and in this diagram, for example, at the beginning, the balance is not correct. So some kind of reaction is going to occur. And in this example diagram, it appears to be a forward reaction because the reactants are disappearing and the products are forming. So that energy then is changing in the solution. But at some point, that solution energy stops changing because the concentrations stop changing. And so therefore, this third definition would be that the energy in the system is constant. So the diagram that best goes along with that is one of these reaction progress diagrams. So because my diagram up above here, which maybe I shouldn't have made it such a small thing off to the side, I'm realizing that does have some value to present now. So the reaction progress diagram, the one I've shown you before, is the one that looks like this. This is the diagram I so heavily favor because this is the one directly related to thermodynamics, which is one of your major topics for the quarter. And similarly, this shows higher energy reactants going to lower energy products. And you see that if we have more reactants, just like in the diagram up above, then in this example, the energy in units we don't know yet, and in terms of progress, it will want to go towards products. And as I hopefully have already done a few times now, that means it's going to end up at this lowest point, which is equilibrium. And once it's there, the energy doesn't change any further. So I kind of leapt into this in a hurry because I had a lot going on right before class started. So I don't think I had centered or settled myself mentally enough. So let me repeat, and I see you got your hand raised there, so I'll come back in just a moment for you. But I wanted to start out with these three definitions of what equilibrium are. And let me just say them all again and maybe try to say them all a little more clearly. The most common definition that people tend to learn is about rate, because that's the balance part. Equilibrium, equal weight. In fact, to just go off on language for a little bit, does anybody happen to know why the word pound in English, not like hashtag, but like the weight, pound, why do we abbreviate it LB? Why is a pound in the UK also abbreviated with an L? It is Latin. That's separate from gold press Latinum. Latin, librium, pound, weight. That's why we have LB. Equilibrium. That's just to help make you think equal weight. So equal weight of what? Two processes that are in opposition to each other. So the example that I blurted out first was about evaporation and condensation. So things evaporate, things condense, and eventually at some point, if you have a closed system, that reaches a balance. That's equilibrium. So then the picture I drew is what happens in a chemical reaction. You have some reactants, you have some products, they're going to react in with each other until you reach a balance point of some kind. Rate of the forward reaction equals rate of the reverse reaction. And then in terms of concentrations, you have the graph there again showing how concentrations will change. And at some point, if the system's not disturbed, those concentrations will no longer change. And that's equilibrium. Then the diagram that, as I've said multiple times, I care a lot about is this reaction progress diagram. Just to throw the one thing on here that matters. This shows that the reaction is downhill in energy. But once you reach the bottom of the hill, unless you push it back up the hill one way or another, then the system's going to settle down there. And so that's our third definition of equilibrium, that energy in the system is constant. Okay, now that I got that out a little more clearly, any questions about equilibrium itself? Because what I'm going to do in the background really quickly here is bring up the text. Because I'm realizing that for some of you, as much as I like to bounce around in my order, because I have an idea how to relate topics, some of you it's a little bit more useful to go in the order of the text. So I think because equilibrium is such a mathematical chapter, I'm going to do it in the order of the text. So just one moment while I log in. So this is... Oh, I'm sorry, Sean. I totally forgot. You had a question ages ago.
Yeah, Professor. The energy in the system is constant, as in the third definition of equilibrium that you have listed. Does that mean if it was in a closed vessel that the system's temperature is the same as the vessel's temperature?
Okay,
and
so that's
when it would reach equilibrium?
You're realizing that that is only true, that statement, in a sort of idealized case, which to say it simply, we would call it an isolated system, one that is magically separated from the rest of the universe, so there's no worry about the container.
Nice.
Exactly the same kind of system that you would have used last quarter in calorimetry.
Okay.
You know, where you have the water,
yes.
either the chemical reaction if you did Hess's law, or if you did if your instructor did an example where you had a piece of metal and then you did that calculation, you have to either worry about the container, so you worry about its heat capacity, which some instructors go there. I didn't, so I just pretended that that cup was magical and isolated from the rest of the universe. Same way that we would define it here to say that energy is constant.
Okay.
Makes sense?
Makes sense, yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Anybody else have any questions before we now dive into the text? Okay, so section one is... Ooh, internet lag. Hold on. There we go. Is all about these definitions that about rate of forward and reverse reaction. And I used to develop the topic more from a standpoint of kinetics. These days, I'm more about thermodynamics. So that's why I'm skipping some of the more detailed parts of that chapter, because we'll come back to them when we hit the kinetics chapter. Now then, reaction. Section two, we get to one of the big ideas of the chapter about Q and K. So let me draw both of these diagrams, because I'm realizing on the fly that both of these are useful for understanding equilibrium. So one of these is going to be energy, the reaction progress diagram that I love so much, and the other one of these is going to be concentration. So let me replicate what I had on the previous page here in terms of reactants and products versus time, and then reaction progress, both of these for an energetically favorable reaction, where the reactants are higher energy than products. So let's say we're talking about two situations. And I'll call this example one. The reaction has started, but only been running a very brief amount of time. So, what could we say about this reaction? Well, if we don't have many products yet, then the reverse rate of reaction is not that high. We've got a whole bunch of reactants, so the forward rate of reaction is very high. And let me say that reverse. The forward reaction rate is near its highest. While the reverse reaction rate is at its lowest. And for those of you who like to translate it to math, rate forward is greater than rate reverse. So what does that mean? More products need to form. For the reverse rate to increase. Now, to start connecting to these diagrams, remember there's K, the equilibrium constant. And K, just to write it somewhere, is simplified products over reactants. But that is the identical expression for Q. Oh, RP is reaction progress. Q is products over reactants just at any point of the reaction, but where we haven't gotten to equilibrium, or maybe we are. And that's the whole point of what Q is. You put in concentrations, reactants, and products, and you figure out, are you at equilibrium? Just like one of the problems that we had worked on Monday. So on these diagrams, if I'm talking about a point in time where the reaction has not gone very far yet, then I mean probably something like here. And again, on the diagram on the left here, same thing. So that would be Q, because that's my measurement of the reaction at that time. That's why it's called the reaction quotient. And quite clearly on the diagram on the left, we can see that Q is not equal to K yet because, well, there's too many reactants. And as I'm about to say in a moment, too high of an energy. On the right-hand side, where would K be? Well, it would be off the edge of the graph here or wherever the concentrations stop changing. So in this example, to say it in math, Q is less than K. So the balance of reactants and products hasn't been reached. So what's the solution? Well, we need more products. The reaction needs to go forward. And that will make Q get bigger because the form of the expression is products over reactants. So as Q gets bigger, it will eventually become K. the end of the quarter is where we put it all together and talk about thermodynamics and talk about energy. Because the point of the diagram on the left here is higher than energy than where K is located. Now, you notice that on that delta G, I just add a little circle. And that circle means the standard state. What does the standard state mean? Don't ask yet. You're not going to like it. Because the definition's simple, but the explanation behind it, how it relates to this diagram, don't ask yet. You're not going to like it. So, having said that, Q is still anywhere we want it to be, but I'm just pointing out that there's not as much energy left at this point than what we could have been if we started at this thing at the standard state. So when we do this discussion again, if I want to fix this, I could say, pretend we have a reaction starting at the standard state, and R is going to be still higher in energy. And then I say, let the reaction start. And then Q is now somewhere, not the reactants. And everything I just said is still true. There's just a lot of technical details we've got to get to. The Q variable is wherever the reaction is. It's called the reaction quotient. And it's like, I'm trying to think of the best parallel. The only thing I can think of is cooking. Your thermometer. You know, is the turkey done? For those of you who are vegetarian, apologies. It's the first thing that could pop in my head. Because if you're not familiar, poultry and such, really you have to cook it properly because you can get salmonella. Oh, so you always have to reach a certain temperature. So are you there yet? That's your goal, that temperature. How do you figure it out? Well, stick a probe in it and figure it out. How's a reaction's temperature detected? Concentrations. So you figure out some way of measuring concentrations, and then that way you can figure out the balance of products and reactants, and Q is your measurement. Q is the temperature. Where do you want to reach? Well, that's K. And yes, at Q, when Q equals when Q equals K, you have reached equilibrium. What is reaction progress? Percentage of the solution that is reactants versus product. So the other way that I've done this, and this is being a little loose with the axis here if you wanted to get fussy, but I say 100% reactants versus 100% products. Now, since it's already come out about energy, let me go ahead and write it down here. The reaction is not at its lowest energy point. And because products are lower in energy than reactants, forming products releases energy. That's the conceptual side of section 2. It introduces what Q is. It says when Q equals K, you're at equilibrium. And what we've done is we've gone off the deep end to explore that topic. Because the diagram on the left doesn't happen for a couple of chapters still. But as you can see, I keep using it and it just makes too much darn sense to ignore it. So that's why I've introduced it so early. Okay, but now we got to really what are Q and K. So any questions before we now continue? Take your screenshots. And does anybody need to see page 1? Okay, please take your screenshots there. All right. So now, continuing on in section 2. Come on, internet. There we go. So we've already talked about what the format of Q and K are, but okay, let's just get this fussy topic out of the way. Since the quiz has been delayed, we can get around this. Activity is a concept related to concentration, related to energy. So, okay, Hess's law says that how a chemical reaction occurs doesn't matter. It just matters what are the reactants and products. Why? Because it matters about what the energy of the reactants and the energy of the products are, which turns out happens to be related to their concentrations. Except there's a problem with that. Because the concentration you might calculate by putting something in the solution doesn't always equal the effective concentration itself. And before I even talk about this thing activity, let's talk about an example. Because you might not have ever heard of something like this. Something about ion pairs. This is going to seem like a completely unrelated question, but it's not. Does anybody know what phase of matter the substance hydrogen chloride exists in? Guess. So if aqueous, that's hydrochloric acid, which is what you get when you bubble hydrogen chloride, the gas, through water. But you might also know that hydrogen chloride, once it enters water, turns out to be an extremely strong acid. So what's a strong acid mean? Not necessarily low pH, but that's a complicated reason why, and that you wouldn't know that until after you take this quarter. Always dissociates. That's more it, that it has to do with the extent of dissociation, or to put it in the context of this chapter, K is large. Products form instead of reactants. The thing likes to fall apart. So H and Cl completely dissociate in water. So you get H pluses and Cl minuses floating around. What if you stuffed it with as much HCl as water could possibly take? Then what if this happens? Because I don't honestly know if it happens for the substance hydrogen chloride or not, but my recollection is it does. Eventually you get to this point. Maybe you have a hydrogen cation that is floating around with a chloride anion. What is it that makes these things so compatible with water in the first place? The fact that they're ions, the fact that water is polar. You know, we've spent so much of the first recent part of the quarter talking about intermolecular forces. So imagine that you've got water molecules that are surrounding the hydrogen chloride. And of course, the hydrogens are going to be more oriented towards the chlorine, and the oxygens are going to be more oriented towards the H+. So without drawing this whole thing out, this forms a sort of solvent cage. Now, what if the concentration reaches the point where ions are kind of pushed into being together, even though they should technically be dissociated? Well, that means that the behavior of the solution might not match the calculated concentration. And that's what activity is, a measure of the effective concentration of a mixture. So let me write down what this thing ion pairs is. And the reason I talked about it is to give you some context of why or where would this activity concept come in. So ion pairs form when a substance dissociates But the ions are trapped together. By solvent molecules. This can cause the solution to have a behavior that differs from its calculated concentration. And so that's what activity is. An activity is a representation of the true or the effective concentration of a substance in a mixture. And the reason it matters is it's directly related to energy. In the text, concentrations are directly used. With one small adjustment, activity as a concept is technically done in a way that doesn't have units. So what you have to do is you define a standard state for a set of units, and the activity is defined relative to the standard state. So I guess that means we have to finally get to the topic of the standard state again. But take your screenshots because we're done with this page. Okay, then, there we go. The standard state and this is a little different than the technical modern thermodynamic state. So I'm going to say the standard state in the text. So this is going to be different than maybe what I said before. It is still 25 degrees Celsius. But here it states 1 ATM. And I just got to make the commentary. Modern is 1 bar. But the one thing we probably haven't talked about before is that for solutions, it's one molar concentration. So the activity is equal to concentration divided by one molar. Which means no units. Same thing is done with pressures. It's just I don't want to go into any further details because this is really beyond the text. It's just the text talks about the fact there are no units, and rather than wave my hands, I at least want to give some explanation why. So now that we did that painful bit, are there any questions? Then, we have some more discussion just about what Q and K are, and there's this very interesting thing here about this example of the decomposition of calcium carbonate. So, to replicate the picture that's here, it has a bell jar, a glass jar, that has a pile of calcium carbonate, calcium oxide, and then carbon dioxide is the intermediate in between. And it says there's this reversible process that can happen where calcium carbonate can decompose into calcium oxide plus carbon dioxide gas. So it starts this discussion out about what would K look like. All right, so I'm going to put in quotes here. K is equal to the products over reactants. So the products would be calcium oxide and then concentration of carbon dioxide divided by the concentration of calcium carbonate. Now, why do I have this in quotes? Well, here's a thought question for you. If a solid is not a solution, how can its concentration be calculated? Concentration is moles of substance divided by liters of solution. We don't have a solvent. We don't have a solution. How can you calculate a concentration? The answer is we don't. Because remember, we do these things in activities. And even though I'm saying that activity is this topic that we don't really know because it's this thing that's in a chem major's version, it still comes up. And that's the only way you can explain this. That we don't put the solids in the expression at all. Since there's no real concentration, or the true answer is the activity of pure solids and liquids is one. Why? Because chemistry. In other words, that's as deep down the rabbit hole as we're going to go. So the true equilibrium constant for this turns out to be totally based solely on the concentration of the gas. So there are times like this where certain substances are not included in the equilibrium constant. And that is the one notable type of exception that we're going to see. Otherwise, it's products raised to their coefficients divided by reactants raised to their coefficients. Okay? Now the rest of the section goes into more manipulations, like more tricks you can do with Q and K. It's mathematical. It's necessary. We do need to do it. But we're going to scoot on for now because some of those problems won't make as much sense until we've actually dealt with equilibrium constants. Now, one thing I want to do, which is going to be a little painful, is to talk about equilibrium constants dealing with pressures. We won't have the time to be able to do that today, but I'm just giving a heads up, like what will we do on Friday? We're going to come back to 17.3, which is about Kp and Kc. So that's section 17.3. Now, just to put the context, last time we did do a mathematical problem where we had a chemical reaction, we looked at the concentrations, and we tried to figure out which way was the reaction going to go. And that's exactly the type of problem that's done in section 17.4. So this 17.4 is a Q versus K problem. Then we get to the real fun of the chapter, the real math, and that's the ice problem, the initial change end. It is possible, depending on which things we finish on Friday, that these ice problems, except for very simple ones, might not be on the quiz. The quiz may focus on the theory part. That's why I went back today. I guess that's why I was unsettled at the beginning of lecture today, is I wanted to make sure to get all this concept out so you could read it and then ask about it on Friday so we could be ready for the quiz. And thankfully, I have gotten it all out. So besides just needing to talk about pressure and concentration, which we need to do before the quiz, coming out of the quiz, there's a very practical application for all of this equilibrium. And that's acids and bases. This is the organic notation for acetic acid. Acetic acid is a weak acid. What does that mean? It dissociates, but not very much. Now, because acetic happens to start with A, it's very convenient for us to write these structures as HA, A minus, and H plus. And if I do that, I could write an equilibrium constant for this. And reordering this slightly in a more traditional format, products would be H plus and A minus. Reactants would be the undissociated acid. And this gets a special name called a KA. And this is what is known as an acid dissociation constant. And I just mentioned that acetic acid is a weak acid. Meaning it only minimally dissociates. And the Ka at room temperature, because I've looked it up enough, I actually know it, is 1.76 times 10 to negative 5. And notice there's no units, because this is technically calculated as activities. So what's the point of telling you this? Because if Ka tells us the balance of products and reactants, and one of the products is H+, that means there's a relationship between acid strength and its effect on solution. In other words, it's pH. So one of the most important types of equilibrium calculations is to come up with H+ concentration to come up with pH of solution. And that's where an awful lot of the problems coming are going to be.